You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, yes. Well, good to be on the radio once again. Wonderful 3CR. This is Jessica speaking.
And this is Daryl here.
Yes.
How are you this evening, Jessica?
I'm pretty good. I'd first like to acknowledge that this program is being broadcast from the lands of the Wurundjeri of the Kulin Nation. So their sovereignty was never ceded, and we want to pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging. And we also acknowledge that the unfairness of the welfare system disproportionately affects First Nations people. So, yes, so we've got a packed show today, Daryl.
Yeah,
and we've got an interview with Caitlin Blythe coming up soon. Mm-hmm. She's going to talk about robo-debt and, of course, it may have sort of receded from the news, but it's still unfortunately there. And, you know, the politicians who were part of that are still out and about. We've also got some news about an event that's coming up later on, actually this week on Thursday evening. And so that's going to be an update, which anyone who's actually experiencing the pains of JobSeeker, and not to mention going to the job providers, anyone is welcome to join in on that. But that's on Thursday. We'll give you the details later.
Oh, Serena, I told you last week, stop calling me.
Yeah, you seem to be getting a lot of these calls.
Oh, hang up for me, will you, Jessica? Well, you didn't have to slam it.
Okay, right. So, and later on also, Daryl's going to be describing one of the many calls that he gets when he volunteers on the Unemployed Workers Union advice line, also known as the advocacy line, which is, and that advocacy line is open Monday to Friday, 10 to 2 every day. So we really recommend if you're having hassles with the job providers, you really call that number, and it's 1-800-289-548. But we will be playing that, that we will be reminding you of that number later on in the program.
They can also email us as well, send an email in with your complaint, and someone will look at it and take it up for you.
And once again, we think mutual obligations should be abolished. And, there are enough pressures trying to survive on the amount of JobSeeker, pensions, DSP, etc., without having to go through the hoops applying for non-existent jobs or going on courses which are in a lot of cases meaningless.
Yeah. I've noticed that myself. There's a lot of jobs that just aren't there that's advertised on places like Seek and what's another one? Those
all the
sites.
Companies.
They all put false job ads up there and the government's down our throat, won't you get a job? Or why do they let these false jobs advertise on those sites? You've got to kind of sift through them, you know.
It's a mess. We're going to be speaking soon to Caitlin, who's going to be talking about her experiences with robo-debt.
Very big one.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Fred has a bachelor's degree in screen media and film production. So, of course, he applies for work advertised within that field, as well as other positions. His job provider did not like one of the jobs he applied for, which is within his field of study, and told him to delete it and apply for another. Now, let me be clear. Job providers do not have the right to restrict your job search efforts. Of course, there are limits. For instance, applying for a job as the next Prime Minister of Zimbabwe or a refrigerator salesman at the South Pole. Other than that, you are free to apply for any job you are qualified for or that you are able to do. Also, if you're receiving JobSeeker payments, it clearly states in your agreement with Centrelink, not your job provider, Centrelink, And it says in part, you must accept offers of suitable work, not just work in your preferred industry. Well, that works both ways, mate. So a job provider cannot override an agreement you have with Centrelink. I told Fred to ignore any threats and or what they tell him about that and to do nothing. It's just an empty threat. At his next appointment, the subject didn't even come up. Because they know if you want to apply for a position in your field of study, there is absolutely nothing they can do about that. So they know their place all right.
Yep. Okay, Caitlin, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, right. Sorry about that.
Hey. Oh, great.
Yeah. Oh, we were pressing buttons. Ayan's helping us and all that. Yeah. Phew. First of all, yeah. Yes. No, so what you heard was a quick, just then, was a quick clip of an example of what Daryl goes through when he talks on to people on the Australian Unemployed Workers Union advice line. Anyway, we'll go straight into talking to you. So just a bit of a content warning. We know that what you have gone through is being quite upsetting. So just for listeners to be aware of that. So, Caitlin, so RoboDebt. Tell us about your experiences.
Well, what a good time, first of all. RoboDebt, just nonstop good ideas from the government.
it's rearing its ugly head again, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that I wrote this essay for Mianjin reflecting on watching the videos of the RoboDebt Royal Commission, because what I was seeing was the culture and attitudes of, like, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Social Services, Centrelink, like, haven't changed and there's not enough being done within the government to change these attitudes towards people who need the social security safety net.
Mm.
And, it's not surprising to me that we're seeing sort of like RoboDebt 2.0 and things like that roll out, because something that, so I've been a Centrelink recipient for a long time. I think I've been on the disability support pension for 12 years now. Before that, I was on New Start, being chronically ill and disabled. And yeah, in 2016, I got handed a RoboDebt. We weren't calling it RoboDebt yet back then. I didn't know that anyone else was going through it. I thought that it was just a mistake happening with me.
Yeah, can I just ask how far back was Centrelink talking about? Like, this is 2016.
Yeah.
You got the first notice about it.
Yeah, no, they were interrogating me about jobs that I'd had back in, like, 2009, 2010. And they were saying that I hadn't reported income, but, like, if a human with any kind of idea of how a life on a casual income works would have looked at my file, they would have seen that some months I had a job, some months I didn't have a job, and that's when I was on Centrelink. And those months that I wasn't reporting an income to Centrelink was because I wasn't on Centrelink those months, pretty obvious stuff.
Yeah.
But they wanted to just rake as much money out of the past, like out of Centrelink recipients as they could. And to me, I remember at the time tweeting something like, if I was really cynical, I would say that the Liberal government is trying to get money out of years when Labor was in government, and then say like, oh, look how much money Labor was overpaying to welfare recipients, and we've corrected their mistakes, But actually what they were doing was illegal. Yeah, I don't know. It's a whole attitudinal problem.
Yeah.
And there was a real sense of, like, a lot of these testimonies of these politicians and Centrelink leadership that were giving these testimonies at the RoboDebt Royal Commission, there was such an air of looking down upon anyone who needs Centrelink that I really recognized from my experiences as a Centrelink recipient, which I'm sure, like, everyone knows that feeling. But, like, I think there was something so validating about seeing that being put on record and having the commission put questions to them and them having to actually answer the questions. Like, I'm sure everyone saw the video of Scott Morrison being told over and over by the commissioner that he has to, like, stick to the question.
Yeah, because... That was just terrible. I mean, another friend of mine commented, if you thought that maybe the bureaucrats were sort of plotting against you, that RoboDebt proved that they were.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. That was my overall, I wrote this essay where I actually published excerpts from my, like, personal diaries from back then and those times when I felt, like, alone, I felt hunted, you know, and I felt persecuted by Centrelink and by these departments. And I had, you know, some people in my life telling me I was being a bit paranoid. I felt like other people were like, no, they probably are out to get you. And I was like, don't tweet about it and stuff like that. And like, and then, you know, through the Royal Commission, that's why I wrote this essay called Data Matching in Mianjin, because I was matching my experiences from back then and my instincts about the situation I was in with the actual evidence we have now. And I really think that welfare recipients are the best experts on what it's like to be on welfare. And we're, you know, the testimonies of these people like Alan Tudge, Jason McNamara, Christian Porter, Scott Morrison, a lot of the people who were sort of involved in delivering RoboDebt, a lot of the attitude is, oh, these people, like, what they mean welfare recipients. They're like, they're, you know, they think of us as uneducated, which apparently is our fault. Like, someone wasn't educating us, buddy. That's not, like, why would you look down on people for that? They look at it as like, lazy, as welfare is, like, encouraging all of the most immoral behaviors. It's very Victorian England stuff.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's just cruel. It's just cruelty. And so I didn't want them to be able to, I guess, it felt like a lot of people talking about welfare recipients without our voices being in the mix. So I wanted to put on the record that I was aware of what I was being put through, and they pushed me right to the edge. And I'm very highly educated, and I was very aware of what was going on, and it was still pushed me right to the edge of life, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there needs to be respect for people on welfare. There needs to be understanding that we're not like a lesser type of human.
No,
that sounds like bare, bare minimum expectations, but we're not there yet. So.
Well, that's been on payments like that. Of course, they probably thought, well, you know, these people can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that they would be in front of that commission, really? That wouldn't have been part of their career plan, I don't think.
No, but, you know, I will say it seems to have had very little impact on their careers.
That's true, yeah.
And they got to just keep you know, Scott Morrison is probably still on the XPM pension, which if you ever look up how much ex-prime ministers get for the rest of their lives, like, just be careful because you probably will want to throw up. It's a lot.
Another thing about the plotting was that when people who were on RoboDebt spoke out, they were found during that commission to have actually said, how can we deal with these people who are speaking out, and how can we release information about their personal lives?
Yeah, and that's something that really was happening. And at the time, as a welfare recipient, unaware of, like, any of the advocacy going on around RoboDebt and any of the sort of, I didn't know about the sort of structure around it yet. I didn't know that this was like a algorithm that they're rolling out. I thought that Centrelink had just made a mistake with my particular case.
Yeah,
well, I definitely felt like if I spoke out, I would be punished. There would be a backlash. Yeah.
The point you made right at the beginning, that you thought you were the only one, and I remember when I got mine, I thought I was the only one as well. When it started hitting the media a bit, you felt a lot better because you realised it was part of a systemic attack in a way.
Yeah.
But
it's
still...
I had my name in the class action, so I think I got I won like $4.
Oh, God.
So, you know, that really made up for all the months of suicidal ideation.
Yeah, right.
And not that I'm joking. Like, the payment out of that wasn't supposed to, like, represent the impact on us, but it's still funny. It was still funny when I got that money in my account, and I thought, yep. I want to say something. Sorry, I don't want to use up too much of your time, but I just wanted to say that.
We've got a couple of minutes,
But the way it ended for me, I suppose ended isn't quite the right word, but was that I had a lot of stuff happening in my personal life. I wrote an essay at the time in early 2017 responding to something that Christian Porter had said on the radio about it just being an inconvenience for welfare recipients to have to, like, have the burden of proof on us that we that we didn't do anything wrong.
That was just wrong.
Yeah, and I wrote it, but I wrote an essay trying to put like the reader and you know Christian Porter into my life for like a day, and I emailed that to his office, and then they forwarded it to Alan Tudge's office, and then someone from that office got in touch with me, and they made it very clear, like when they finally waived after a few weeks of like going back and forth and me having to provide all this evidence that they never even looked at, they waived my robo debt on benevolent grounds. They said they kept using the word benevolent. They kept making it clear that this was them being kind to me, that they were not admitting any fault and they hadn't made a mistake. And then they even, while I was crying with like relief on the phone, they were even going as far as to be like, now next time, don't make a mistake and make sure you report all your income. And I kept saying, you know, this wasn't actually anything that I did wrong.
No, you know, of course not.
You guys made a mistake. And they were just like, oh, just for next time. Like they couldn't admit. It's very much like being in an abusive relationship where your abuser is never going to admit fault. It's always your fault.
The victim's fault. Yeah,
fault.
Yeah, I was hit by the robo debt too, and I made the mistake I made the mistake. Well, I thought, well, I declare every cent I earn, I'm innocent, no problem. And they asked me for this information. They went back 7 years, and I was emailing them all the old pay slips and all these other documents that I had, which a lot of people wouldn't have after 7 years.
No,
I did. Yeah. And it made it worse for me.
Really? Yeah, that's right.
They used it against me.
Well, oh, Caitlin.
Well, the reason I was going to just bring up the benevolent thing is because they said at the end of the call that they'll probably never raise this debt again. So if I, even just speaking out, publishing this essay, coming on here and talking about it, if someone at Centrelink or, whatever it's called now, Services Australia, decides that I'm a problem, they can raise my debt again, and the zombie robo debt can come back and bite me in the ass again.
Oh, okay. And well,
like we're seeing new iterations of this kind of scheme come back. Where I think the point I'm trying to make is that even the robo debt technically ended, it didn't really end. I don't know if we're materially in a better off position now as welfare recipients, and. Yeah. I just want to make that point. I know that your listeners will know, our listeners, I just love this show. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Right? Oh, yeah. We could tell you love the show, but I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap your interview up now.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much, Caitlin.
Oh, it's lovely talking to you, Caitlin.
And we'll hopefully hear from you again. And just for the listeners, the Lifeline number is 1-3-11-14. And yeah, just to, we hope that people will take action if this raised issues for them.
Better say that again, Jessica.
1-3-11-14.
That's
so, bye, Caitlin. We'll talk to you again.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Just saying our goodbyes now. Do have this event on Thursday, which is a mutual obligations update. So you can go and contact us via 3CR or on the AUW website if you want the details on it. That's Thursday evening. And you'll hear from us again next week.
Next Monday. Yes.
Okay, bye from us.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.